here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello and welcome to the Zach's Friday Finish Line. I am Ryan McQueenie, a content writer here at Zach's, along with one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
Hello, today is Friday, January 19th, and we're here to recap this week's biggest stories in the investment and financial world. So chaos yet again on Capitol Hill, and we have seen multiple failed attempts at a bipartisan deal to extend government funding this past week. Meanwhile, it has also been a chaotic week on Wall Street and in the cryptocurrency markets.
Yeah, a wild week indeed for many of the world's top cryptocurrencies, including, but certainly not limited to, the OG Bitcoin. We're going to get to that story later on, and we're also going to be covering some massive news from one of the country's most historic companies, General Electric.
But before we get into all of that, Ryan has the latest news from Amazon's search to find a second home.
Yes, Amazon announced on Thursday that it had officially narrowed the list of candidates for its second headquarters, aka HQ2, down to 20, eliminating the vast majority of the reported 238 applicants and bringing the remaining cities one step closer to the 50,000 jobs promised by the e-commerce behemoth. Those are supposed to be high-paying, skilled jobs as well. So you can see why so many applicant cities were excited about the opportunity. We are down from 238 to 20. Are you ready for the list, Maddie?
Absolutely. Give it to me.
Here we go. Atlanta, Austin, Texas, Boston, Chicago, Columbus, Ohio, Dallas, Denver, Indianapolis, Los Angeles, Miami, Montgomery County, Maryland.
Not a city.
County. Nashville, Newark, New York. Also not a city. Northern Virginia.
That is a region.
Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Raleigh, North Carolina, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, the only international city on here, and Washington, D.C., which I guess is technically a district, but whatever. I guess it's a city as well.
Yeah.
So for those keeping track, that's actually Washington, D.C. basically three times, because you've got Northern Virginia, actual Washington, D.C., and Montgomery County, Maryland.
So definitely...
That's the DMV, as they call it, D.C., Maryland, Virginia.
Oh, I did not know that.
DMV area. So heavy on the DMV, heavy on the East Coast in general, some cool Midwestern names in there in Chicago and Columbus, a couple Texas names, Los Angeles, really the only West Coast name there.
Maybe just put it on there because it's LA.
Yeah, not super surprising that the West Coast kind of tech heavy already, that they're avoiding that. There's a few in here that were some shoe-ins, few that might be a little bit more surprising. Amazon provided no further details on why each city was selected, other than to say it based its choices on the criteria announced at the beginning of the search, which included having a metropolitan area of more than 1 million people, that is, and an ability to attract top technical talent and keep that talent around. Company officials will now work more directly with finalist cities, and Amazon is expected to select a winner later this year. Holly Sullivan, Amazon's head of economic development, said in the press release that, quote, "Thank you to all 238 communities that submitted proposals. Getting from 238 to 20 was very tough. All the proposals showed tremendous enthusiasm and creativity."
Where did they propose to change the city name to Amazon? Was that in Georgia somewhere?
Somewhere in the South, yeah. It was. They literally were like, "If you want, we can name it Amazonville or whatever.
Give it to us."
Holly Sullivan there, kind of touching on the application process. It's unclear exactly how the next phase of this process is going to look for these local governments, but judging on the very public displays that many put on during the application process, whether it be saying that you can rename the city, to the extended videos we saw many municipalities put out, it should be entertaining at the very least. One thing I want to say is I think it'll be interesting to see whether existing businesses in any of these areas, step up to the plate and say, yes, Amazon, come join us. We want to be your neighbor. We want to work with you. We want to have you around for strategic partnership reasons, or whether some businesses are going to be like, this is our turf. We don't need Amazon around here poaching our talent. Off the top of my head, I look at Raleigh, North Carolina. That is where enterprise software company Red Hat is based. They have a strategic partnership with Amazon Web Services. So it'd be interesting to see if that is something that could attract Amazon there, or if Red Hat would be worried about Amazon coming in and poaching talent. Obviously, with Raleigh, North Carolina, center of the state, you've got Duke University, UNC, Wake Forest, NC State, so a lot of schools there. That's the talent Amazon is talking about. You've got the DMV cities we talked about. That's basically, you know, three different cities that are all of one area almost. Mm-hmm. And so you've got all the talent up in Northern Virginia and Washington, D.C. Some interesting companies that could be worried about Amazon coming in, or maybe welcoming Amazon. We've heard about Amazon going into pharmacies, CVS, Walgreens, and Rite Aid are all based in cities that are like 1 to 2 hour drives outside of finalist cities. And then I'll also note that Whole Foods, which of course we know quite well, it was acquired by Amazon last year. Whole Foods founded and currently headquartered in Austin, Texas.
Yep.
So maybe that would be a signal that if they went to Austin, maybe that's like a double down on that acquisition.
And also sign real estate leases in Boston?
I don't know. I don't know if I heard that or not.
So
Boston's hot right now. Everybody loves Boston.
It's San Francisco's sister city. Considered the sister city. So yeah, I read that, or I think one of our coworkers was mentioning that they signed some sort of real estate deal in Boston, and they were trying to keep that under wraps. Maybe not. I could have just made that up.
They have corporate offices here in Chicago that they just brought on 200 more employees. That was a big to do with the Windy City's investment in technology. We've seen a lot of these names crop up as Silicon Valley East or whatever buzzword you want to apply to them. Chicago is Silicon Valley Midwest now, so it's at this point, I think, a total crapshoot. I think all of these 20 you could build a really compelling argument for.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I guess Boston is a great point, though, because that's like... It, like I said, hot right now. It feels like a cool city to be living in.
People love
it. 2018.
Especially the techies.
Yeah. So if you're going to bring talent over from Seattle, right? Like you gotta
maybe
make
it was
compelling.
Seattle's sister city or San Francisco's. Maybe it's both of their sister cities. I don't remember. but yeah, Boston is really popular.
But
again, it would raise up their already expensive housing prices. So it's not like Boston's already kind of going through a housing crisis. It's not like it has room for 50,000 more people.
Right.
At least in like the metro, the core Boston area. So they would have to go out of the metropolitan area.
Super good point is, where do you just put 50,000 highly paid people? Like, yeah, 50,000 high skilled, high paying jobs sounds great. But now you've got 50,000 upper middle class people, and they want to live in an upper middle class neighborhood at upper middle class prices. Like, that you don't; those don't grow on
right.
trees.
And not like no city wants to end up like San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
where there's homeless,
a housing crisis,
where there's a housing crisis, and middle class, hardworking middle class Americans literally don't have anywhere to live, and they can't afford to live in the city that they work.
You don't want to be busing in public school teachers because they can't afford to live where they work. So that's obviously a good point. And maybe that's why you're seeing something happen like the DMV area, where it's like, okay, we'd like to be around Washington, D.C.
So maybe we'll go to Northern Virginia.
Yeah, maybe that makes more sense. So
yeah, that's a good point.
But of course, at Amazon, traditionally sparse on details, so we don't really know what they're thinking other than these are the 20 names that are on the short list. So keep your eyes on all of those cities, as I'm sure the governments will start to turn up the marketing efforts here soon. Moving on to someone that could maybe use some renewed marketing, a legendary business that is the craziness going on at General Electric right now.
Yes. So we have known that things are not headed in the greatest of directions at General Electric, GE, more known for more than just light bulbs. Mm-hmm. Since the company announced that it was slashing its dividend in half last November. But now it looks like even more significant changes are coming. The speculation began, split speculation began when GE announced that it will be taking an after-tax GAAP charge of $6.2 billion to its fourth quarter earnings. And this significant hit that is linked to weakness in the company's North American life and health insurance portfolio. And that charge, if you factor in the 21% corporate rate, it's actually $7.5 billion. So a little bit more worse. GE also said that over the next 7 years, its financing segment, GE Capital, would make $15 billion statutory reserve payment contributions to the long-term care insurance assets. But in order to fund this, the company will be suspending GE Capital's dividend for the quote-unquote foreseeable future. So some not great things happening over at GE. And its new CEO, John Flannery, said in a conference call with analysts that, quote, we are looking aggressively at the best structure or structures for a portfolio to maximize the potential for our businesses. And a review could result in many, many different permutations, including separately traded assets, really in any one of our units, if that's what made sense.
Leaving the door open there, too.
Really. So that's kind of where that breakup speculation started. And CNBC had a report where sources were telling its co-host of Squawk in the Box, David Faber, that a breakup is coming soon. It could happen as soon as in the spring. What that breakup could look like, no one knows at this point.
Yeah.
So in breaking up a huge conglomerate like GE, it would be massive.
Mm-hmm.
So GE has kind of been on this down and out path for a while, and the company was the worst performer on the Dow in 2017, with shares losing almost 40% in value. Margins have been on the decline since 2014, and the company's free cash flow has grown less and less consistent, especially after it decided to sell its very lucrative lending business, and that was back in 2015. So when Flannery took over from previous CEO Jeffrey Immelt last August, and wasn't Jeffrey Immelt on the shortlist for a new Uber CEO as well?
Am I not remembering correctly? We had profiled his whole deal on the show, so we know all about Immelt. He was there for
like 17 years at GE.
Quite a long time, yeah.
So back to Flannery, he made promises to consider all options for the company and emphasized a business strategy that would concentrate on jet engines, healthcare machines, and power generation equipment. But now it looks like those changes are coming quite soon. And kind of like we discussed before, GE, it's a powerhouse company, and it's been kind of this, I guess, a company that people look to or have looked to in the past that is like a sign of like the overall health of the American economy. So if GE isn't doing that well, is the American economy doing well?
Yeah.
Yes and no at the same time.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to note. I think because as you said, they shed a couple of lucrative businesses over the last few years. So this whole breakup isn't even necessarily to the extent that it could have been 10, 15, 20 years ago, as they have already undergone, shedding certain businesses from the very diversified conglomerate that had been at its peak. It's just tough. It's tough to even really make that connection anymore. It's this iconic brand, this iconic name. But you know, worst performer in the on the Dow, losing 40% in 2017, when that index is hovering near an all-time high,
right.
And you're looking at other components consistently touching new highs, you know, almost right. every day.
You have competitors like Honeywell and United Technologies reaching new highs.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. What is you doing,
I mean, GE? GE is certainly not where it was back where it was in the 80s and the 90s under Jack Welch. But again, it's all about management. And I don't know if it's fair to compare leadership.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly is to some degree, but all leaders have their own strategies. And Jeffrey Immelt, thought it best to sell yeah. off.
You're also
a ton of
yeah. You're also
assets.
On that note, like you have to play the hand you're dealt. So
yeah.
you take over the business when you take over the business,
right.
And there are massive shifts in consumer trends.
And under Jeffrey Immelt, there was the Great Recession, and it was for a lot of companies, it was hard to bounce back from that. So yeah. Anyways,
it's a great
we'll see
point.
What Flannery has for GE.
Yeah,
and it's always a good thing. For an older company like GE to have a fresh, a fresh leader, at the head of the table.
Yeah, so. I agree, definitely. So, what's coming? I guess we don't know, but soon is when it's coming. So, moving on to things that are hard to predict. This week was crazy one in the cryptocurrency markets. The multi-day market-wide cryptocurrency crash really came to a head on Wednesday when several notable coins, including Bitcoin, Ether, Ripple, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, all the ones you know and love, once again on Wednesday experienced sharp double-digit declines. The sell-off really started due to a flurry of stories. This is a tough thing, as you guys know from the show. We try to cover, you know, when a notable stock is moving significantly higher or lower, we try to look at the root cause of that. So if it's a massive story that's going to affect top or bottom line performance, if it's an earnings report, if it's a buyout bid, you know, we can trace a lot of these big moves to specific news stories. Not always the case with cryptocurrency. We do know that there were some negative headlines throughout the week that could have been causing kind of some sell-off panic. In China, reports have indicated that regulators are gearing up to crack down on the country's Bitcoin mining operations. The scope and location of mining operations isn't entirely clear to everyone, but we do have a general sense that most of the world's giant mining operations are taking place in China right now. And then kind of compounding that fear, we learned that Chinese officials are reportedly working to further restrict domestic internet users from accessing international cryptocurrency exchanges. Chinese regulators actually banned the use of cryptocurrency exchanges last year, but they noticed an uptick in a few workarounds where traders were accessing different online options that offered more centralized trading. Meanwhile, the cryptocurrency market has grown increasingly worried about South Korea's intentions to regulate trading, another really hotbed for cryptocurrencies. South Korean officials have now walked back the Justice Minister's recent claim that the country is working on an outright ban on cryptocurrency exchanges. But the government has at least confirmed that it is considering a number of proposals to curb speculative trading, which it has kind of deemed a major issue going on in the economy. There was also the notable collapse of BitConnect. People who are really into this scene might know more about it than I do, but it's a popular exchange that recently launched its own coin in what's known as an ICO, an initial coin offering. That coin recently crashed more than 90%. BitConnect, in the way that it was operating in the past, kind of just folded spontaneously, caused a lot of anger in the community because BitConnect had been kind of sponsoring a lot of influencers is a word, I guess, and social media influencers, YouTube influencers.
Yeah. Oh, YouTube or on Instagram?
Yeah. YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, these guys kind of revving up BitConnect as the place to go. And then all of a sudden it kind of just collapsed underneath itself and everyone was like, did I just get scammed? So that kind of underscored some fears there. At its lowest point on Wednesday morning, Bitcoin's total market cap was at about $158 billion. That was quite the far cry from the $252 billion it was at as recently as early Saturday morning, late Friday night. So that's in the span of, what is it, 4 or 5 days, $95 billion taken off the value of Bitcoin. $95 billion is, to visualize that a little bit, about the current market cap of Netflix. So we're talking about this week's crash wiping a Netflix worth of market cap off of Bitcoin. Briefly, cooler heads prevailed a bit on Thursday, with most of the popular coins bouncing back in the double digit percentages. Proponents of Bitcoin will quickly point out that the quote unquote January crash is not a new phenomenon, and it has actually resulted in significant post-crash surges in the last few Januaries. But the significant surge in Bitcoin over the past year, this year's January crash comes at a moment when really the stakes have never been higher, more attention being paid to it. This swing's kind of greater, more significant. So yeah, crazy week midweek for cryptocurrency traders. What else is there really even to say on this subject other than we kind of already knew that we didn't know anything. So
yeah,
that's going back to some like Socrates level philosophy, like the wise man is the one who admits what he doesn't know. So I'll just keep it there.
Well, and now I guess now that I think about it, this has really nothing to do with cryptocurrency, but more of an influencer. Their Kardashians are basically influencers.
Yeah.
So you know how they always like have like flat tummy tea?
Yeah.
I don't know if you follow the Kardashians on Instagram.
But
I follow the Kardashians on Instagram. I follow all of them. I don't know if that's sad, but they're fun to like, you know, follow, whatever. But they always like, they're like, oh, I'm drinking flat tummy tea. And they like, you know, like hold up the tea bag and they're like, oh my God, it's working so great. So just imagine if that was like a Bitcoin.
That's
or
exactly
like,
what was happening.
They're like, this is so
great. It was
it's
go
making me
do this.
So much money.
That's exactly what was happening.
It would be like hashtag ad, hashtag sponsored, hashtag flat tummy tea, hashtag healthy life, hashtag SponCon.
Yeah, it's all of those. That's exactly what was happening, except for we as, you know, consumers of healthcare products more frequently and experienced there. We know that something like flat tummy tea is probably not going to miraculously result in us having a flat tummy, and we can use a little bit of discretion there. But
right.
this was happening with BitConnect and these people who are showing you all this money that they're making on this platform. They're saying, go here, go here, go here. And then all of a sudden you look the next day and, you know, the massive money that you just pumped into it is all gone, and you all of a sudden you're like
that,
I should not have taken that advice from that random 17-year-old
that young man
kid
on StockTwit who just tweeted and his mom was bringing him chicken nuggets and he slapped that plate of chicken nuggets away and he was like, why is this world so unfair?
That's we saw panic on all the forums.
I don't know if that was from BitConnect, but
it was.
BitConnect.
That StockTwits post that you're referencing was 100% about BitConnect. So that's what it was doing to people.
Just like a fly.
It was a tough week
Don't give me chicken nuggets. I don't want those chicken nuggets.
Tough week for teenagers pumping BitConnect on YouTube.
Well, we just
certainly
all hope it was a teenager.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to actually say his name on the air because I don't want to be accused of like doxing someone, basically. But there was one of the influencers that I'm talking about that was kind of caught up in this whole BitConnect quote-unquote scam or whatever you want to call it. I wasn't paying enough attention to it to know exactly like the mechanism that was happening and how it was executed. But I know a lot of people were really frustrated with one particular person on YouTube who was 17 years old, who was kind of pumping this BitConnect platform. And that's kind of when the experienced investors who have been kind of bearish on this whole craze, that's when you prove those guys right. When you give all your money into something that a 17-year-old kid on YouTube told you to invest in, that's when the old school guys who said avoid this like the plague, that's when they look really
They're
smart.
Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know what? The people who are day trading this stuff and who are coming up with plans and strategic, like even algorithms on when this is going to bounce back from specific lows, all the guys who bought on Thursday morning when the bounce back was starting to occur, who bought as it was falling, all the people who are experiencing gains from the double digit recovery on Thursday afternoon, those guys also feel really smart right now. So it's like a total crazy mess of who's right, who's wrong, who knows where it's going next. Fun fact, nobody knows where it's going next.
But I just love seeing Bitcoin memes on my Tumblr.
Yes, there's the
it's fantastic.
It was a great week for memes, basically, is what my overall point is. It was a great week for Bitcoin memes. Not a great week to be a 17-year-old who is sponsored by BitConnect on YouTube. And that's all we know about the subject. So that does it for us this week. If you got caught up in this BitConnect mess, I want to hear from you. If you have an opinion about this General Electric breakup, I want to hear from you. If you have an idea for a story you'd like us to cover, or if you think we missed something, feel free to shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com. You can also check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcasts. Remember to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you next time on the Zacks Friday Finish Line.